He wanted me to bring you this. Paul looked directly at me, his gray blue eyes more intense than I had ever seen them before. I took the notebook from him, and he continued to stare at me like someone in shock. "Do you have a minute?" he asked me. "Yes. But I'll have to go inside first. I left the children on their knees. I'll be right back." The children all looked at me as I walked up the aisle to the table. I told them to rise from their knees. When they had all sat down, some of them rubbing their knees before sitting, I told them I had to speak to someone, and I wanted them to remain quiet until I got back. I told them that Jefferson had sent a notebook to me, and I was going to leave it on the table, and later we would talk. I left Irene Cole in charge and went back outside. Paul and I started walking down the corridor. We were both quiet. I waited for him to begin.
"It went as well as it could have gone."
He spoke slowly as we walked abreast, he looking up ahead, I down at the ground.
"There was no trouble. He was a little shaky, but no trouble."
Paul was quiet a moment. Then suddenly he stopped walking. After going another step, I stopped, too, and looked back at him.
"He was the strongest man in that crowded room, Grant Wiggins," Paul said, staring at me and speaking louder than was necessary. "He was. He was. I'm not saying this to make you feel good. I'm not saying this to ease your pain. Ask that preacher. Ask Harry Williams. He was the strongest man there. We all stood jammed together, no more than 6, 8 feet away from that chair. We all had each other to lean on. When Vincent asked him if he had any last words, he looked at the preacher and said, 'Tell Nan and I walked.' And straight he walked, Grant Wiggins. Straight he walked. I'm a witness. Straight he walked." Paul stopped talking. He was breathing heavily. He was looking at me but seeing Jefferson in that chair. We started walking again. We were passing by Miss Emma's house, but Paul didn't know this. He had never been in the quarter before. After they put that death cloth over his face, I couldn't watch anymore. "I looked down at the floor," Paul was saying. His voice was quieter, less intense now. "I heard the two jolts, but I wouldn't look up. I'll never forget the sound of that generator as long as I live on this earth." We came to the end of the quarter and stood on the railroad tracks while gazing across the field at the rows of early cane. Paul got in front of me to look in my face. "You're one great teacher, Grant Wiggins," he said.
"I'm not great. I'm not even a teacher."
"Why do you say that?"
"You have to believe to be a teacher," I said, looking at the rows of new cane. To the right of where we were standing were the tall pecan trees in the cemetery. There would be another grave there within a day or two.
"I saw the transformation, Grant Wiggins," Paul said.
"I didn't do it."
"Who did?"
"Maybe he did it himself."
"He never could have done that. I saw the transformation. I'm a witness to that."
"Then maybe it was God," I said. Paul continued to look at me. He did not like the way I had used the name of God. He came from good stock. He believed. But he didn't say anything.
"You ready to start back?" I asked him.